All right. That's right. Decisions enforced. All right. Yeah, there you go. Welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your host, Michael Slate. That's right. And we have a packed show today, and one that's a very important show. A very important show for all the reasons that you'll learn about as we go through the show. At the back end of the show, we'll be talking with Atlas and Michelle from the Revolution Club Los Angeles and two of the UCLA Five. And those were some people who were busted for standing up against and exposing and calling out Mnuchin. That's right, calling out Mnuchin when he was out at UCLA. And they are being hit hard by the system, and so we'll be talking with them about that. Before that, we'll be talking with Wayne Kramer, legendary guitarist and musician and the founder of Jail Guitar Doors in the U.S., and on Rock Out 5, it's about Rock Out 5, okay? A new installment of Jail Guitar Doors at the Ford Theaters. So we'll be talking with Wayne about that, all right? And opening the show up, I'm really pleased to be welcoming back to the show both Reverend Frank Wolf, who's the pastor of Echo Park United Methodist Church and Refused Fascism. And Frank was on our show a long time ago. I don't even know if he remembers it, but he was on our show for a while back. And I also want to welcome back to the show Andy Z, a co-initiator of Refused Fascism and a participant in the Get Organized for an Actual Revolution tour. Frank, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you back, man. We'll have to do it more often.
All right.
And Andy, welcome to you too, man.
Thank you, Michael. Hello, Frank.
Okay. Well, let's jump into this, Frank. I'll start with you. You know, there's been a lot of new developments. And I was thinking about this because when I went to an event that you were in with Andy a little while ago, a few days ago or a week ago or something, you know, and it was a whole question, how rapidly things have changed, even in that little space of time. And all these new developments, you know, all the things that are coming out around the, you know, Trump and what he's doing and what he's calling for, and the Democrats and what they're doing and what they're not doing, and all of this stuff that's actually posing some very big questions, I think, for people. So let's jump into this. What's your take on all these new developments?
Well, I think people are putting a lot of hope into the possibility of Trump being impeached, and he certainly put his foot in it, so to speak, with some of the things that he's said. And so we're beginning to see a rallying of people within the ruling classes trying to find a way to be able to push him out and begin to move the country in a different way. I was talking with Andy a little bit earlier today, and what strikes me is that Trump is just the top of an iceberg, that there's a much bigger movement that's underneath Trump that is really beginning to... That's pushing him forward. They use him. They need him as their figurehead. But the push in the United States toward fascism goes much, much deeper than the man who currently sits in the White House. And so it's not enough just to impeach Trump. Not even if we can convince the Senate to convict him. It's not enough because fascism has already really started to consolidate, and fascism is continuing to consolidate. It will continue to consolidate even as impeachment hearings go forward, even if Donald Trump is impeached. We shouldn't forget that if he is convicted by the Senate, he will be followed by Mike Pence, who will be just as bad, if not worse, than Donald Trump in so many ways, even though he doesn't have kind of the bellicose personality, the bigger-than-life personality that Trump does. We have to organize. We still have to be in the streets, mm-hmm. whether or not the impeachment proceedings are going forward.
Mm-hmm. Andy, would you like to jump in here? Give your any thoughts on this?
Well, you know, this is just beginning to unfold, and so a lot of thoughts at this point are tentative. But I agree with what... what Frank is saying, that the Democrats now are compelled, they feel compelled to initiate these impeachment hearings or inquiries that they still have not taken a vote on impeachment, but that they feel compelled to do that is a significant move. It's going to mm-hmm. really change a lot of the political climate because it's going to be very two-sided, and for sure, and the question is it going to be three-sided, in my opinion, is a very sharp question. In other words, what I mean by two-sided is that in the development of of a really different form in which this ruling class is going to rule, that's favored by this section of powerful people, that powerful organizations and social movements that have been building over the last few years, and the network of Fox. This fascist movement is intent on changing the rules of the game, whereas the Democrats have continued to try to say, yeah, but these are the rules of the game, and Donald Trump says, the hell with that, I'm doing something different here. Now, this is going to be sharpened on a different level. Look, one of the things that fascism has to do is vanquish or neutralize its political opponents, and that he went and tried to blackmail the Ukraine to go after the main person that the Democrats have as a candidate. I'm not saying that that he should be the main person. I'm not, as a revolutionary, that's not actually the arena that I think we're going to have initiative in. But that they went after him is extremely significant, and it both evidence that they're willing to shatter what have been political norms, two, that they're willing to subvert, again, the elections. There's been plenty of evidence there, and to rig the elections in such a way that they are dominate. And if they can't do it that way, then there is the question posed, even if he lost, would Trump leave office? But this is, for the Democrats' part, they're now in it, and the question is, how will this be prosecuted? And they have thus far said, and Nancy Pelosi said, we're going to restrict this to the Ukraine, to that particular incident. Now, not to say there's nothing in that. There's actually a lot of content in what was done there. But he has to be impeached on the basis of their whole program, or else you're going to have, as Frank just brought out, you're going to have Mike Pence next, and as Frank also brought out, there's a whole movement and power structure behind this. And you actually have to go for all the ways that the norms have been broken, all the things that they actually have done. So the question of, when I said, is there going to be a third force in the field, is, are the people going to be fighting in their own interests to say he's got to go, but not just him, that the Trump-Pence regime must go? And that's speaking for myself now, not for Refuse Fascism, and speaking for the movement for an actual revolution, that third future for us is working towards the time when we could actually make a revolution and overthrow the system and bring about a radically new world. But right now, the question of whether the people are going to be in this and fighting in their interest and demanding that this impeachment inquiry be broadened and that it actually drive out this whole regime is a decisive question, and that's what we'll be meeting about this Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I'm going to get into a little bit more about the meeting in just a minute, but I want to actually ask a couple more questions, actually. Now, Frank, even with this, what Andy's just been saying and what you were saying, I think those are very important, and including this idea. I mean, look, people are looking at what's happening. There's a great danger of, just one way or another just throwing things or entrusting things to the powers that be, even if it's the powers that be Democrats. But there's really been an understanding, I think, beginning to develop in certain forces that there has to be a movement coming from below, a movement that actually mobilizes people. But at the same time, you're faced with this, the fascism advancing in stages, and leaps are being made in a vacuum of opposition that exists now. How do we actually, how do you see that?
Well, it strikes me that that part of what our problem is, and part of the reason why there's a vacuum, is because we who are opposed to the advance of fascism, we who are opposed to the Trump-Pence regime, are very, very divided in the kind of work that we're doing. So you get a bunch of people out on the street protesting against the administration's policies on climate change. You get a bunch of people out on the street protesting against immigration policies, and so on and so forth. You get a bunch of people out on the street protesting for women's rights. What we have to begin to do in order to be able to fill this vacuum is to help each of these groups begin to understand that we're not going to advance in a positive way on issues related to climate change, so long as the Trump-Pence regime and the fascist group that is supporting it continue to be in power, continue to run this country. We're not going to be able to make any kind of positive advance on immigration until and unless, we are able to rid this country of the Trump-Pence regime and those who support it. We're not going to be able to move forward on women's rights or LGBTQ rights, or whatever the case may be. And so there's a need for us all as we march into the streets, as we normalize this state of being in the streets, there's a need for us all to be able to add that the Trump-Pence regime must go, say no to a fascist America. These have to be added to the slogans that are being spoken at all of these rallies, so that all of these rallies then feed upon each other and support each other rather than drawing strength away from each other. And the overarching issue that has to join us together is the issue that Refuse Fascism has brought up, which is that the Trump-Pence regime must go. So we have to as people, if we're going to be, I like that way Andy has described the situation with the people as a third force working for its own interests. We as people need to understand that our interests can't be defined narrowly. That we need to be able to broaden our interests, work together across the particular areas of passion, to be able to create a unified movement for change in this country.
Mm-hmm. Let me remind listeners that you're tuned into the Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with Reverend Frank Wolf, the pastor of Echo Park United Methodist Church and a member of Refuse Fascism, and Andy Z, co-initiator of Refuse Fascism and a participant in the Get Organized for an Actual Revolution tour. Andy, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, and we should start moving a little bit into, there's a sort of, you're confronted with a situation right now. You're confronted with the situation about what Frank has just been talking about, what we see with the push towards the impeachment kind of thing, and all this stuff happening. But there's actually a real need for people, as I was saying earlier, that there's not the people out there saying yes. People aren't running through the streets with pitchforks and fire, fire sticks and stuff, right? And so there's a question here of this stuff has to be brought to people, and people have to actually understand what's at stake and what's necessary. So how are you looking at doing that?
Well, look, I agree with what Frank is saying. And I think if we step back and take a look at it, we can see both from historical experience, but also in over the last 2 years, how the fascist regime can absorb protests around particular outrages. And they double down on each one, and then they back up, then they stall, then they say, okay, it's in the courts, but then they go ahead and do it either undercover or they stop one front and go in another front. And they continually throw the movement against us off guard. When we go out and talk to people, everybody gets what a big problem this thing is. And now we've been given a gift, in one sense, for what we have been saying in Refuse Fascism all along. And we were in Washington this weekend at the We the People March, and we did a chant that said, Puerto Rico and Hong Kong, show us how, Trump and Pence out now. And the point is that there comes a time when the people themselves have to take matters into their own hands. And by getting out there in the kind of spirit you saw at the Student Climate March, of just going and saying, and what Greta has conveyed, we are not accepting anything less than this. And the vision that we're talking about in these protests is not a protest as usual, assemble, speeches, march, go home, or just one organization and then everybody gets to speak. We're not even talking about that kind of thing. We're talking about something that is around one single demand in the name of humanity. Actually, the one single demand is the Trump and Pence regime must go now. Refuse Fascism has the very strong position that in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. But what we envision is the demonstrations being organized in a very decentralized way, people doing it in their communities, people but assembling at first every week and then during the week, going out even broader among the people and creating the kind of situation. Just imagine, people should get out of how things have been. If you actually had a situation where there were tens of thousands at first and hundreds of thousands of people in streets and cities across the country, not 1 week, not 2 weeks, we're proposing, that we will start on the 19th, and then for four Saturdays afterwards, we're going to see if we can build the kind of momentum that would begin to get to the situation where the rulers of this country would be faced with the whole world looking at that every weekend, tens of thousands at first and then hundreds of thousands and potentially millions of people were in the streets. That would create the kind of crisis that would break open not just the impeachment of Donald Trump, it would accelerate that and make it for the full array of his crimes, including all the illegal stuff he's done around the border, around tearing up treaties, all this kind of stuff that you know, yes, the Democrats have been complicit in themselves over years, and they've now been complicit with this regime by not actually calling out the people that actually have been relying on them. And that if you got this kind of process going, you could actually get a situation where the regime itself was, as a whole, was removed from office, first one, then the other, and you were able to clear the decks of this. Now, that would still leave the system intact, from my position, and we would have to go forward from there and fight and build a movement for that. But look, right now, millions of people feel a tremendous dread and angst and upset at this regime. But if you got people in the street, you would see that that dread could be turned into a force for hope. You would see people with the kind of determination and conviction and joy that you see on the faces of people in the protests in Hong Kong, that you see on the faces of people in Puerto Rico. You saw it in the Arab Spring, in the, you know, and actually again there, where people are determined to fight for their future. That would advance every progressive agenda. And should the Trump-Pence regime stay in power, everything that people have been working on will be, in fact, locked down in a very horrific future if he doesn't blow up the world through a war that could start in the Middle East, it could start in South Asia.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're moving up on our time, so I want to, Frank, I want to have you pitch in there and see if you have anything you want to comment on or add to from what Andy was saying, and then I'll have another question for you right after that, sir.
No, I think Andy's hit the nail on the head. That really we have one overarching question that needs to enter into all that we do as we protest against the Trump-Pence regime. We need to get that regime out, and we need to refuse to accept a fascist America and do whatever it is necessary in order to stop the further consolidation of their power.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to do that every time we get together.
All right. And Andy, anything else you want to add?
Look, a lot of people say, there are a lot of people now saying it's fascist, but then they tend to say, oh, well, it's sort of fascism, it's proto-fascism, it's neo-fascism. It's not yet fascism, which is precisely the point. It's not yet full-out consolidated fascism. That's what we're trying to stop. And so we'll have a chance to get into that. And more, people can have a chance to think, to talk about this plan, to talk about doing a Puerto Rico here, if you will, where they drove out the governor in a certain 14 days or something by having, because people took to the streets in a nonviolent way day after day. We're going to start week after week, and there's a lot of reasons for that. We'll discuss all of that at these at these meetings. And there's a chance for people to bring in their own thinking, how they see doing this, and to raise their questions about what we've done as refused fascism. Let's put it all out on the table, because we have to, as we've said many times, we have to cast off our fear and passivity. We can't wait on the Democratic Party leadership to take care of this. The people have to do what they're going to do. This needs to involve people who believe in the elections and believe in the system and think it can be a force for good, or think it is a force for good, but that this regime is the problem, as well as people like myself who see the problems rooted in the very foundations of the system. We all have to come together, and we must not allow our differences to stand in the way of rising together in this unprecedented and unrelented, sustained mass struggle to confront the danger that confronts all of us. And frankly, if we do this, there'll be a lot of really healthy and joined debate over reform versus revolution, this program, that program, why do you do this and why do you do that? All of that's part of it, but it's in the context of working together to stop something that is catastrophic for people in this country and for people in the world, which is why we in Refuse Fascism say, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America.
Andy, Frank, thank you both for being on the show today, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right.
Thank you, Michael.
All right, take care now.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show. Right now, I want to play a clip from Bob Avakian, chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party. It's "This is Order or Justice" from the talk, "The Trump-Pence Regime Must Go. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept the fascist America. A better world is possible." So check this out.
It used to be a common saying, to the person of the right, order is more important than justice, while for the person of the left, it is the opposite. Now the question is put squarely to liberals, and really to everyone. Which, after all, is more important? Order, even if that is the order of fascism, with everything that means? Or justice, even if that means stepping outside of our comfort zone and putting ourselves on the line to prevent this fascism from consolidating its rule and fully implementing its program?
All right, that was Bob Avakian, chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party, with Order or Justice, an excerpt from the online talk, The Trump-Pence Regime Must Go. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept the fascist America. A better world is possible. And you can find the entire talk as well as the Q&A sessions at revcom.us. We're going to take a quick break and be right back, so stay tuned. All right, welcome back. Now, that was The Clash with Jail Guitar Doors, and that was something that inspired my next guest, actually. A little later than that, in terms of basically developing an entire movement, actually, an entire movement and around called Jail Guitar Doors, right? Yeah, and I'm talking about Wayne Kramer, and he's sitting over here. Man, you know, Wayne, when you put that thing on there, it could be like, you know, sort of super space things coming out of your head. It's feeding all the music to come into your brain, man. There you go. So listen, Wayne, it's really great to have you back. It's really good to see you. And I really want to talk to you about this because this is something that you've dedicated a large part of your life to. I know you do all kinds of things, but this is something that's always been in your heart, you know, and I'm hitting my right side. It should be whatever. But basically, Jail Guitar Doors is something that you brought to life. And let's talk about that. Tell people what this is, what inspired it.
Well, it's no secret I served a federal prison term in the 1970s. And it made me acutely aware of how America treats people who break the social contract. And then after I was released, I watched for 30 years as more and more people, just like me, went to prison for longer sentences under worse conditions and did a slow burn. I've been conscious and active politically my whole life, and I just reached a point where I had to do something to try to mitigate the damage being done. Entire communities have been destroyed. Families have been destroyed for political expediency. Politicians think that being perceived as tough on crime was going to win them votes, and it probably did, but the damage being done is immeasurable. When I went to prison in the 1970s, there were 350,000 people in prison in America, state and federal. Today, we have 2.3 million of our fellows under lock and key. So what could I do? I'm a musician. It was important to me to play music when I was in prison, to participate in the community of prison life. And it helped me process the pressures of life in prison. So I thought maybe I could do concerts. And then I ran into Billy Bragg, a wonderful British troubadour. And he told me he had launched an initiative in England to provide instruments for prisoners to use as tools for rehabilitation. or abilitation is probably more accurately. And I thought, this is brilliant. This is exactly what I've been looking for. So 10 years ago, Billy Bragg, my wife Margaret Kramer, and I launched JGD USA. Today, our instruments and our programs are in over 140 American correctional facilities, and we work in the juvenile halls and the probation department youth camps across the country, and especially here in California, you know, trying to work upstream and try to dismantle the cradle-to-prison pipeline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's very heavy because you think about this, and including the fact that, look, you know, you and I both came up in a period where, you know, it was sort of, on the one hand, there was like this, there was this wild, open experimentation going on in society. And as people were engaged in that, at the same time, there was this creeping, fascistic, crawling thing that was coming up. And you seem to have got caught on a cusp of some of that. Not, you were able to avoid or stay away from the way the slam down that came down a little later, where you talk about so many people, as you're talking about, being thrown into prison. And, you know, I mean, I remember, you know, we all know how the cops can actually plant dope on people, can take somebody who's got a joint and say it's like a lot of, it's like a lot of smack that they've got, something like that. So there's this whole thing. And it's really, I have always admired the fact that you were able to, one, go in there, and two, to stand up against this stuff morally and, you know, even physically in a certain sense, which is really important. And I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, when you talk about this, the people, you know, because you sort of slid over this, but it's actually been very, very, it was very important to the people that you were in jail with, too, in terms of even you brought music to them, you know, and that had a big impact on people. And I think it also had an impact on where you went with that afterwards, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. You know, musicians traditionally have gone to prison, and there's no shortage of musicians under lock and key. Yeah, I was able to work with some wonderful players, actually. I met a great mentor for me, a great jazz trumpeter named Red Rodney. Red replaced Miles Davis in the Charlie Parker Quintet. And he was an older man then. I was in my 20s and he was in his 50s. But he was able to inspire me and actually became my teacher and taught me writing and arranging music through a Berkeley correspondence course that he had taken on an earlier visit to prison. So, the idea that people can produce something of beauty in a world that has no beauty. Prison is designed to strip you of your humanity, and to be able to argue against that forcefully with a song or a play or a dance or a poem, these are ways to escape prison legally and to manage the stress of life in these facilities. You know, all those big, tough-looking prison guards, they're not there to keep you safe. They're there to keep each other safe. And they view the people in their custody as oftentimes less than human.
I was just going to say that, yeah. That's it. And it's a really important point to make. One of the things I wanted to ask you about, too, is that, you know, you talk about, well, basically the way the music developed, and then when you came outside, you know, because it really felt, jail guitar doors, for instance, you know, when you came outside, I don't know if that sort of formulated when you were in prison, but you also, when you came out and you said you met Billy Bragg and you were talking this and you guys set up this up, but it actually, tell people exactly what this does, because, you know, it's not just sort of you're sort of teaching people to play the guitar. You know, it's something that's much more important in a certain sense.
What we do in our workshops is help people to find a way to express complex, often painful emotions and memories in a positive way, to be able to tell their story and contribute something to the world of beauty. If I put a guitar in a guy's hand and task him with writing a song, maybe to his mom's or to his son, about how he got there and what he might be able to do to avoid coming back here again, it will change him. The transformative power of creativity really comes to the fore. Art is one of the few things we know of that can reach people on a deep, fundamental level. So The things that they learn in our workshops are, for example, how to collaborate with other people. People who may not look like you, may come from a different neighborhood, may have a different color skin, but you're going to work with them and discover that you have way more in common than you have in different. And these are skills that everybody needs out here in the world. You know, we all have to collaborate with each other, and we have to have an open mind and listen to what somebody else says before we make a decision about whether we agree with them or not. These are valuable skills that art and music in particular can teach you. You know, art teaches us the secret of how to work, how to stay in one place and finish a project to the end. And the workshops themselves, you know, we don't recognize gang affiliations, racial distinctions, sexual preferences, class differences. There can be no threats and no violence in our workshops. In our workshops, we're all artists. Prison politics stay out on the yard, and in this room, we're all safe. We can talk about everybody and everything, but we have to treat each other with dignity and respect. And the men, women, and children that we work with all love the workshops because it gives them a break from life in a correctional facility.
Now, let's jump into what's going to be happening this weekend.
Yeah.
You know, because it's actually, I've been to a number of these over the years and always left like just soaring, you know, and they're an event that actually really both opens people's eyes, but also, you know, really opens your heart and you feel something, and you feel something that you weren't feeling maybe when you went in. You know, you're dealing with that's the insanity of the world that we've been given or faced with, and there's actually this stuff that goes on. And I have to say that the ones that I've been at, the surprises, but also just the things that were being played and said on the stage were really remarkable. And I wanted to talk a little bit about what's in store for people if they go now.
Sure, sure. I'd like to think that people leave with a sense of connection. They leave, you know, feeling like we're all in this world together. We're all participating in our ongoing social, civic life, and that we can put a human face on prisoners. You know, most people, all they know about prison is what they see in movies and television, which is grossly exaggerated and inaccurate. Believe me, people in prison are exactly the same as you and me. There's absolutely no different. They have the same fears, the same hopes, the same ambitions. So this year, and thank you for the kind words about the shows. This year, we are featuring the great Jack Bowers. Jack Bowers started teaching jazz at Soledad, the state prison at Soledad, 25 years ago, and has hundreds of men have gone through his program. And we work together through the William James Association in our work in the state prison system. And Jack's bringing a couple of his prize graduates with him to work with jazz giant Phil Ranelin this year. So that's very exciting for the music fans. And Jack will probably share a few remarks about his experience in the teaching in the prisons mm-hmm. for a quarter of a century. Of course, we have our fantastic headliner this year, Moby. Which was a great, great surprise. And you know, we had been running into each other. I'd see him around town, and we started talking one day, and he said, you know, I'd like to do something in criminal justice reform, you know. And I said, well, I'm pretty sure I can make you regret that. And he said, no. And I said, well, we have this annual concert. Would you like to play? And he said, absolutely. It was that simple. And he's stepped up. He's bringing his whole band. We're very excited about it. And, of course, yours truly will sing and dance for a few numbers with some of my friends that I can't announce just yet.
Okay, but I read something about you. You said something about you're going to be coming in and out of various things. Yeah. I thought, now that's going to be interesting. Wait, is that Wayne's Head? Wait a minute.
Yeah.
That'll be very cool. You also have someone who's emceeing the thing that actually I thought would be important for people to know about.
Yes, our wonderful, beloved poet laureate, Luis Rodriguez, who's just a benefit to all of us. I adore him. And Luis actually is sitting on the JGD board these days, so along with former Senator Gloria Romero. We have a dear friend, the great author and long-serving state prisoner, Kenneth Hartman, also has joined our board. And so we're really looking to step up in the next year. We've got some ideas about the missing link in our work is the, you know, when, especially with young people, when they leave the camp or the juvenile hall, if they have to go back to the neighborhood with nothing any different, they'll inevitably return to the gang. They'll return to slinging, breaking through doors and windows and shooting people. And if we can provide them an alternative to that, a way they can continue doing music, continue writing their songs, help them record their songs, I think we can go a long way to disrupting that cradle-to-prison pipeline. So we're moving into the community now. We're working in community centers in the parks and recreation to take over in the entire management of community centers and provide a full-spectrum arts program for kids in the neighborhood. You know, let's stop them before they get criminal justice involvement. And we've been seeing the ship of state slightly change direction a little bit. They've loosened up some money, so we've applied for some grants and received. We now have a grant that will allow us to run our program on 2 yards at Lancaster, the biggest maximum security facility in the state, just north of the city, for 3 years. So we're feeling good about that, and our wonderful funders, the Bronner Soap Company, the radical soap makers, are standing solid behind us and allowing us to continue to grow and develop. And we're very excited about what the future holds.
All right. And because all the people behind that wall of glass there are saying, come on, we got to go.
Okay. Right, I'm going.
Thank you very much, man. It's really great to see you again.
Fantastic. Yeah, thanks for the opportunity.
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely, man. Wayne, thanks, man. Take care. This is the Michael Slate Show, and we've been talking with the legendary rock and roll fanatic Wayne Kramer, an acclaimed guitarist and co-founder of Jail Guitar Doors, U.S. We're going to take a quick break and be right back, so stay tuned.
Ein, zwei, drei, vier.
Strange things are happening, Lord, I don't know what to do. My friends say it's in my head, I say it's deja vu. It's all too familiar, been down this road before. I believe it was in Germany, just before the war. A meanness swept the land, stealing our hearts and the hands of time, taking us back in history to a place on the darker side, where we saluted the flags of fear and the voice of ignorance roared. I've taken us back to Germany just before the war. The balance of power shifted when the people cast them.
All right, I'm really pleased to welcome to the show my next guests. They're involved with a case called the UCLA 5, and it's going to trial very soon. They've been dragged into court for speaking out against fascism, okay? In February of 2018, members of the Revolution Club and Refuse Fascism spoke out during the fascist Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin's, boy, it hurts to say that name, speech at UCLA. And the UCLA 5 are now on trial in LA and are facing serious jail time. And I'm really pleased to welcome to the show, as I said, Michelle Chai and Atlas.
Hello.
Hi,
thanks
how you
for
doing?
Having us.
Sure.
Hi, Michael. Thanks
Hi.
For having us.
Yeah, sure. Well, let's jump into this right away. In February 2018, members of the Revolution Club and Refuse Fascism spoke out during a speech by Steve Mnuchin, a member of Trump's fascist inner circle. Tell us what happened then.
So Steve, as we call him, the Mouse Mnuchin, came to the UCLA campus in 2018. And this was at a different time when, you know, you kind of see even now with the real threat of war against Iran, right? And at the time, the real threat of nuclear war against North Korea. And UCLA rolled out the red carpet for this fascist to come and speak on this campus. And he gave a speech. And the Revolution Club were in the audience and we challenged him because he really was basically preparing the ground for war at the time. He had just written that and actually made real this tax bill that basically put people that already are in poverty and even worse situations to be able to fund their fascist war against people of the world. And so we publicly challenged him and more than that, called on people to not stand by and to not actually accept the Nazification of these campuses, these fascists being normalized and people silently going along with that. And for that, Tala, who's on the National Revolution Tour, and who was at the time a UCLA student, was picked up out of her seat and dragged out of the auditorium and then was charged with resisting arrest. And then Luna, who is also on the national tour, was sitting next to me and was calling on people and really doing a lot of very important exposure. And people should follow us on Twitter and go to revcom.us and you can watch the video of what we did and what we said. And for that, we were dragged out of the auditorium. We were jailed for 7 hours, and then we were slapped with charges, including, you know, in the discovery process where they give us the evidence, they actually showed that the UCLA Police Department had been stalking the Revolution Club, including writing down people's license plate numbers, following us at different public events on the campus when we were out flyering and talking to students and organizing people.
Mm-hmm. Atlas, I want to ask you a couple questions, too, in terms of this. Like, how did you get involved in this? Were you there during that whole action?
Yeah, I was being prosecuted for a couple of different cases. I was outside the protest of and disruption of the speech of Treasury Secretary and fascist Steve Mnuchin. And I was arrested and brutalized by the police, along with another person, for trying to rally people and say, hey, this is what just happened inside. They just arrested these people for speaking up. And what are you going to do in the face of this? Are you going to stand up? Or are you just going to let them get away with this? And they did not like that. So they immediately took us down. And there's this really great picture of Bo being dragged away by the police that made it into the front page of some newspapers. And I'm also being prosecuted for speaking up and speaking out against former Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel, who was involved in the cover-up of the murder of Laquan McDonald and was actually invited as a thought leader by UCLA and welcomed, and they rolled out the carpet for this politician. And so I went in there and I listened and heard the speech of this person, and when he started talking about his whole program for Chicago and what he's doing for the youth there, in terms of in order to get a high school diploma, you have to actually show enlistment papers in the military, or you have to actually show that you've gotten into some kind of college or show a pay stub, that this is actually a big part of just, you know, telling people if you're not making it in this society, it's your fault. And also the kind of twisted cruelty of telling people and taking people who are the most oppressed under the system and having them become foot soldiers to go kill people just like them all over the world. And so I felt I had to speak out. So I stood up and I told him and the audience what I thought about that. And that was in the mix of a lot of other protesters, people who were outraged against the murder of Laquan McDonald and the role that this politician was playing. And for that, I was pretty brutally arrested and dragged out of the building by the police department there on campus.
You know, it's very heavy because that kind of activity, that kind of attack on you guys for what you're doing, I mean, this bringing these charges against people is actually criminalizing a movement of anti-fascist speech on a public university, completely unconstitutional, but also goes against everything that we've learned when I was much younger, you know, seriously, I mean, it was like we fought to be able to get out and fight for what was right in terms of what was going on in the world and what was the universities doing, all this stuff. And it seems to me that there was like, there was really this sort of, as I was reading how you guys acted in relation to this, there was really this sort of very sharp sense that the university was coming in all kinds of fascistic manners and in all kinds of support for Mnuchin, for Rahm Emanuel, all these people talking about them and putting them forward. And in reality, in what they were doing, even in terms of how they spoke about the people that were arrested and everything else, this question of fascism being put front and center was really important in this.
Yeah, well, I think that's really important when you actually look back at and read about the movement of the 60s and how the college campuses and the universities were like a really important place where people were talking about the world, were debating and discussing and protesting, you know, what was happening in the world. And then fast forward to now where there's just so much conciliation to what's happening in the face of fascism, in the face of these fascists being invited by these college campuses to be coming as thought leaders, as speakers, as if we're gonna have some civil discussion with these fascists as they are calling the people of North Korea, the people of Iran, quoting them as bad people and justifying using nuclear weapons and justifying sending their military to go and massacre these people. And for that to just kind of be left as is without any form of opposition is just wrong when you look at, especially again, since that was in 2018 when Mnuchin came and said that. Here we are in a year later where they're really going forward and pushing for this war against Iran and fascism is fighting to consolidate. And so we did that in the kind of climate where protests are being criminalized, you know, not just on these college campuses, but when you actually look at what has come out of the mouth of Donald Trump since the beginning of his campaign has been saying he is willing to pay for the legal fees of these fascists who brutalize protesters, who take them out on stretchers. And here's this student who's challenging Steve Mnuchin and they get picked up out of their chair. They get thrown out of this auditorium and they get slapped with these resisting arrest charges. And same as Atlas, you know, brutalized by the police for speaking out. And this is happening again when you actually look out at what's happening in the world, when these fascists are getting away with concentration camps of immigrant people at the border, when they're rapidly consolidating their power and there's so many people that are silently going along with it. And it's very important that people have taken to the streets, as we've seen in the past week or so, where people have taken to the streets around the climate crisis, where people have been in the streets of DC around like wanting impeachment. But this is all happening when these fascists are doubling down. And so in the face of that, here are people that they're trying to make an example out of. How do they actually silence protests? The Revolution Club, overall, with these freeway charges and with the UCLA charges, have been slapped with like over 50 charges for protesting against fascism, being slapped with conspiracy charges. You know, I also am one of the Freeway Nine who was charged with conspiracy for that case. And I wasn't even on the freeway. And for these UCLA cases, I'm being charged with disturbing the peace. Disturbing the peace of fascism. When you think about that, okay, that's what was happening there. This fascist is speaking at this college campus and we're quote unquote disturbing the peace of fascism because people shouldn't accept and go along with what these fascists are doing and saying. People need to stand up and resist and call on other people to stop this.
Mm-hmm. This is the Michael Slate Show and we're talking with Michelle and Atlas from the Los Angeles Revolution Club. Michelle and Atlas are two of the UCLA Five currently on trial for opposing the fascist Steve Mnuchin. You know, instead of condemning the fascists, actually it's dissent that's suppressed and fascism that's normalized. And it makes it really, really important in terms of what actually is going on now. You know, and I want you to speak to that in the minutes that we have left. Each of you could actually add to this, that this has all been put on a fast track. This happened more than a year ago. And now it's like on the fast track. People are being dragged up. They're facing trials now. There's the beginning of a whole sort of bombardment of the people who did what was actually necessary and right to do. So let's talk about that. Where do things stand? What can people do around this?
Well, if there's one thing that your listeners take away from this is that this is fascism. This is the criminalization of dissent, and we have to act today to actually stop this. What we're calling for, what the Revolution Club is doing, is they're joining in together with people from many diverse perspectives, joining in with the call put forward by refusefascism.org to drive this regime out of power now, to say Trump and Pence must go now, and to do it the only way it can be done, through massive, sustained, nonviolent protest that starts week by week and grows to day by day, first hundreds, then thousands, then millions. And we want you to come and be a part of a meeting Saturday at Echo Park Methodist Church at 3 p.m. And we want you to come and be a part of considering and planning these kinds of protests. Because let's take a look at what's happening right now. The Democrats are calling for impeachment, but what are they refusing to say? They say that Trump is a national security threat, but they refuse to say that he's a fascist and should leave on that basis. And unless we and our millions get in the streets, this is not actually going to go where it needs to go. And it could actually make the situation a lot worse. But if we and our millions get out there, we can actually make the situation much, much better.
All right, but there's still this thing. There's still this one question. Look, it's really important. I want to spend a little bit of extra time on this at this point, because the fact that the charges are criminalizing anti-fascist speech on a public university is very, very heavy and completely unconstitutional. So I want to go to this part, though. Something I was thinking about earlier, which is, you guys were talking about what's being done, but it's actually, there's also this point of people are facing some terrible challenges right now, some really weighty challenges, not terrible so much as weighty, and some of them are terrible challenges. And people actually have to look at like how things are developing and the role that even actions like this, the important role that actions like this have in helping to forge something, as you were insinuating, you know, and pointing to, helping to forge something that can actually break through on all this. And I think it's really important to reiterate that, the targeting the Rev Club at UCLA and this whole series of incidents that you've been talking about. And instead of condemning the fascists, dissent is suppressed and fascism is normalized. This is a very dangerous situation. So in the remaining minutes we have, let's talk about that, like
yeah,
2 or 3 minutes.
I think that's a really important point, because look, all of this, it's illegitimate. You know, the fact that you do have sitting at the highest seat of power a fascist criminal that are committing crimes against humanity, again, from the concentration camps all the way to the threatening war against the people of the world. This is all illegitimate. These people are committing real crimes, and they're targeting people who are standing up, and not just standing up and calling this out, but actually, as Atlas said, fighting to create the kind of movement like Puerto Rico, right, like Hong Kong, where people take to the streets and actually stay in the streets in a united way where they are actually heard, and not just relying on these politicians, not just getting out in the streets as important as it is for one day and then going home, but actually growing that kind of protest to demand that they all have to leave, not just Trump, not just Pence, but the whole regime. When people do these kinds of bold actions, right, where you do capture people's imagination, you do challenge people, and you do actually put forward a real way that people can act. They don't have to all get on the 101 freeway or, you know, get dragged out of a college auditorium, but there actually is a real challenge right now that people do have to confront, which side are you on? And at this moment, silence is complicity. And if people are not acting commensurate to the situation, then you're being complicit. You're actually facilitating these fascists to continue to ram through their fascist program and continue to even get to even worse situations. And so that's why these kinds of actions are very important. And I'm not saying this just because I'm one of the UCLA 5 or the Freeway 9, but these people are heroes. I'm including myself in all of this, did what actually is required to stop this. And people need to learn from that, and people need to get inspired off of that, but people also need to unite with that, you know, and come to the defense of these people, but also get with Refuse Fascism and this call to stop fascism.
All right, now, real quick, you mentioned the meeting on Saturday, but also how else can they actually show their support, become part of this?
So one important way that people can act right now is by calling the LA City Attorney, Mike Fuhrer, and that number is 213-978-8100. And you would be calling and demanding that the city attorney drops these charges against the UCLA 5 and the Freeway 9.
All right.
One other thing is people should also go to revcom.us, donate to the Legal Defense Fund, and actually support these people that are on trial.
All right. And one more thing real quick.
If there's one last thing I want to leave your audience with, it's this. Go to revcom.us and check out this film from the leader of the revolution, Bob Avakian. The Trump-Pence regime must go. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. A better world is possible. And it gets very deeply into where did this come from and what we can actually do to stop it. You should check out that film and you should find out about this leader who's developed a whole way to get rid of this system that gives rise to a fascist regime like Trump and Pence. And right now, where so many people feel suffocated, like there's nothing we can do as the climate is burning, it's really important that people find out about this leader and what he's brought forward.
Thank you both very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
All right. You've been listening to The Michael Slate Show on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles. And I want to thank my engineer for today, Teddy Robinson, just an amazing engineer. I want to thank my assistant producer Henry Carson, and each and every one of you for tuning in. And right now, we're going to go out with a little bit more of Wayne Kramer. Talk to you next week.